This week's parsha is Parshas Shoftim, and we will begin on page 1028, which is Perek Yud Zayin, Pasek Yud Dalet. Ki savoy el aretz, when you come to the land, asher Hashem Elokecha nisen lach, that Hashem your God is giving to you, v'rishta v'yashavta va, and you will take it as an inheritance, and you shall dwell in it. Va'amart, and you will say, Asimo alai melech, I shall place upon myself a king, kochol agoyim asher tzviv osai, like all the nations that surround me. Sayim tosim alach melech, you shall surely place over yourself a king, asher yivcha Hashem elokecha boi, that Hashem your God shall choose him, mikerev achecha, from amongst your brethren, tosim alach melech, shall you place upon you a king, lo sucha lo seis alecha ish nachri, you are not able to put over you a foreigner, a person who's a foreigner, a stranger, a shoyechichahu, that is not your brother. So if we just take these words as we see them, the Torah is telling us, you'll come to Eretz Yisrael, you'll settle in it, you'll say, I want to place upon myself a king like all the nations around me, and on that, the Pasuk says, you shall place upon you a king, that Hashem your God chooses you. Everything here seems pretty straightforward. Doesn't seem problematic. Peretz said that you'll settle in the land of Eretz Yisrael, you will state, you want a king, and the Torah says, make a king over yourself, make a king over yourself that Hashem your God will choose. Doesn't seem problematic. However, all the Mepharshim, all the commentaries ask, from Sefer Shmuel, from the book of Shmuel, Perek Ches, Pasuk Dalet, where it says, Vayiskaptu kol ziknei Yisrael, all the enders of Israel gathered together, Vayavayu el Shmuel haramasa, and they all came to speak to the prophet Shmuel. Vayemru elav, and they said to him, Hine ata zakanta, behold, you have become old. Uvanecha lehochu b'drachecha, your sons have not followed in your ways. Ata now, sima lanu melech, place for us a king, appoint for us a king, v'shavteni kachal agayim, to judge us like all the nations. Vayeraha davar b'nei Shmuel, the matter was very bad in the eyes of Shmuel. Kasher Amru, when they said, Tanalana Melech HaShoftenu, give us a king to judge us. Vayispalel Shmuel al Hashem, and Shmuel daven to Hashem. So right away, it seems that the elders ask exactly like the way, or almost the same wording that the Torah says. The Torah says, you'll say, I will place a king over me like all the nations around me. That's pretty much the same words that the elders here said. And Shmuel's unhappy. Not only Shmuel not happy, the psukim continue, Vayimr Hashem el Shmuel, Hashem said to Shmuel, Shema b'kala amacha shayimr alecha. Listen to the voice of the people for all that they have told you. Ki loy ascha ma'asu, they are not despising you. Ki oisi ma'asim layichalayim, rather they despise me, rather they reject me for being king over them. K'chala amasim asher asumi ma'alaisi oisim mitzavarim azeh, like all the actions that they have done towards me from the day they took him out of Egypt until this day. Vayazavuni, they forsook me. Vayavdulim acharim, they worshipped other gods. Kain heim reisim gamluach, that's what they're doing to you. Clearly Hashem is not happy either. And the obvious question is, why? Here, the psukim seem to imply that there's nothing wrong. And when they actually ask, pretty much the same what the Torah describes their request will be, or their words will be, and Shmuel is not happy, and Hashem is not happy. What's going on? So I want to share with you two approaches here. One are the approach of the Arachayim, and the other approach of the Kli Yoker. Now, the Arachayim asks another question. The other question the Arachayim asks is, within the wording of these psukim themselves, if we look back again to Pasuk Yedalad, the Pasuk reads, Ki Sabay al Ha'aretz, when you come to the land, Asher Hashem Elokecha Me'isim Lach, that Hashem your God gives you, V'yirishta v'yashavteba, you'll inherit it, you'll dwell in it. V'amarta, and you will say, Asimo alai melech, I shall place over me a king, v'chol agayim asher tzviv v'yisrael, like all the nations around me. So the Arachayim says that if the Pasuk says, V'amarta, and you will say, I shall place upon me a king, that would imply that it's up to the Jewish people to do so. You will say, I will make a king over me. That sounds like it's up to the Jewish people to decide if they want to do so. But then the problem is the next pasuk, where the next pasuk says, "Saim tasim alecha melech." Saim tasim, which we translate as, you shall surely put over you a king. That sounds like that's the wording that's used for a commandment. Mm-hmm. That's the wording that's used for a command. So what is it? Is it reshus? Is it something that's voluntary? Is it something for the Jewish people to choose? Or is it an obligation? The psukim seem to imply both. The amarta, you will say, sounds like it's up to you to decide that. But then same tasim would sound like you're obligated to do so. So what is it?
Or you're obligated to do it in the way
well,
it's described.
Let's just
if
see.
You do it, you do have to do it this way.
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, it says, you know, to pick someone who's from your people, don't pick a foreigner. He's giving the rule. If you do it,
yeah, but
it do it this way.
Okay, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
All right, all right. So that's Arachaim's question. So now, the truth is like this. The Gemara in Sanhedrin actually has a machlokes. There's a machlokes tanoim. And it reads like this. Arachaim Barachaim brings this down. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda said, Shloisha mitzvahs nestabu yisabik nisasim la'aretz. This is a famous Gemara. There are three commandments that the Jewish people had to fulfill when they entered the land of Eretz Yisrael. L'hamid lahem melech, to establish a king, ulahach lezarish al Amalek, to destroy the descendants of Amalek, to live nicely on Beis HaMachira, and to build for themselves a Beis HaMikdash. That's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. They had three commandments. Rabbi Naroi Oimer, the sage Rabbi Naroi said, Loinemra parsha zu el kenege tur amasan, shenemar the amarta asimu alai melech. Rabbi Naroi said that this parsha, this portion that we're reading about a king, was only said as a reaction to the complaints of the Jewish people, as to the demands of the Jewish people that they say that they want a king. It's only a reaction to their demands. Shenemar, as it says, V'amarta, and you shall say, Asima alai melech, I shall place a king for me. So it's pretty clear that we have a machlekes tanayim as to whether appointing a king is an actual mitzvah, or is it a reaction to when the Jewish people make such a demand? That's Rabbi Naroi's opinion. Naroi's opinion is that not like Rabbi Yehuda said that one of the three mitzvahs is to appoint a king, but rather it's a reaction to the Jewish people's request of to their request, as it says, "Well, Amarta, you shall say, I'll place a king upon me." So, according to Rabbi Naroi, we have to figure out. I mean, according to the Torah, it's clearly not a mitzvah. It's not an obligation to have to make a king. It's up to the Jewish people to decide. If so, says the Arachayim, how does Rebbe Naroi explain the wording, same tussin, you shall surely appoint the king, which sounds like a command, like a mitzvah. So the Arachayim says that according to Rebbe Naroi, we have to say that, in essence, the Jewish people don't have to ask for a king. But once they do ask for a king, once they feel a need for a king, then they have to have a king. The Esther Lima Kemu Yisrael Kesherim El Yishalu Melech. If the Jewish people are Kesherim, if they are upright, and they don't ask for a king, Voya Hashem LeMelech Aleihem, and Hashem will be the king over them, Kederach Amrei, which is actually what later on, when Shmuel actually appointed Shaul as the king, Shmuel said to the Jewish people, Hashem Elokeichem Malkechem, Hashem is your king. If the Jewish people are ready just to have Hashem as their king, then the Rabbanu Shalom is fine with that too. But once the Jewish people go down a level and they make a request for an actual king of flesh and blood, that's when they have an obligation to point the king upon themselves. So according to Ibn Roy, if the Jewish people only want Hashem as their king, and they can function that way, that's the way they should go. If they now come to a point where they ask for a king, then they actually are obligated to have a king. So according to Ibn Roy, to understand what happened by Shmuel is very simple. In essence, they shouldn't have asked. They should not have asked. And even our pasuk is saying that if you say, I shall place upon thy king, then you have to have a king. But not, you're supposed to be asking for a king. Really, you shouldn't ask for a king. Really, the only king you should have over you is the Rabbeinu Shalom. But once you come to the point where you kind of fall And you're not on that level only to be able to live with Hashem as your king. You need a flesh and blood representative, so to speak. In that situation, then you're obligated to have a king, but you've sunk a level. You've fallen a level. And that's what why Shmuel was not happy with the request of the Jewish people. The request meant that the Jewish people didn't want to have only Hashem as their king. They needed more direction, so to speak, from a king of flesh and blood. That was where they fell. That's where the request was not a good request. But once the request is there, then you have to have a king.
They always had a king. I mean,
no, they did not always have a king.
But Moshe,
Moshe was not a regular king.
No, but they needed him.
They always had leaders.
They always had leaders.
They had Moshe, they had Yehoshua, they had the judges. But they didn't have a king. And this is now the request of the Jewish people to have a king.
So I'm reading that right now.
I'm sorry.
The brethren, it has to be, isn't it kind of odd, they're saying it has to be Jewish?
Well, that's a separate discussion, but yes, that's what it's saying.
But there were non-Jewish kings also. Right?
Not over the Jewish people.
Were sort of divided tribes. They weren't united, and they also were under attack from the Philistine, and they wanted unity. They wanted to be brought together and have a commander that would unify them so they could fight off.
Yes.
So they had a reason for wanting a king.
Okay.
They needed this a leader to pull them together.
Well, they had Shmuel. They had Shmuel's
old,
sons.
That
Shmuel's
sons.
Sons.
Acting nicely. They were,
okay.
You know,
okay. Okay.
They like
but they didn't have to ask for a king.
I guess that.
They didn't have to ask for a king. That was the problem.
Right.
Okay, but this is the approach if you hold, like Rabbi Naroi, that there's no obligation to have a king. But if you're like Rabbi Yehuda, who the Rambam says it follows his decision, that you actually have an obligation to have a king. So now we're back to the question, what went wrong by when they requested from Shmuel? And again, how are we supposed to explain the fact that the pasuk starts with the Amarta, and you will say, which seems to mean that it's their decision, and then it says same tasim, which implies there's a mitzvah, there's a commandment. So the Chaim says like this, and this will kind of touch on what you said, and that is that there are two possible kings. There are two types of kings. There are two ways to request a king. There are two ways for a king to function. The Aruch Chaim says that by the nations of the world, the king is meant to be their leader that will lead them in war. The way I would say it is, the king amongst the nations of the world is meant to bring them prosperity. That's the bottom line. And in ancient times, clearly the main function of the king was to lead them in war and to go to war with them. And he was chosen as king because of his prowess in war, because of his abilities of war, because of his leadership in war. Or if you want to extend it, it's all about his leadership in the sense of prosperity. As to what kind of person the king really has to be regarding his personal behavior and who he is as a person doesn't really matter. What really matters is the prosperity. What really matters is the success. And that's the kind of king that's not, if that's the criteria for the king, if that's all the king needs to be, the king does not have to be a person of personal high character, but he has to be able to get the job done of bringing victory and war and prosperity to the people. Then that's one kind of king. That's not a king that's going to lead the Jewish people to be close to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's not the kind of king that will lead them to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu properly and give them the prosperity that they need. Then you have another king, which is the proper kind of king, which the Aruch Chaim explains as a king that's l'kavod u'l'tiferes Yisrael. A king that will bring out the true dignity and glory to the Jewish, who will be for a true honor and dignity and glory for the Jewish people. And that, in essence, when this king, now a Jewish king, David HaMelech, also the Jewish people out in war. That's what he did. But David HaMelech's power in war was his merits, was his righteousness. The prosperity that's brought to the Jewish people by the proper king, the king is a king who in his righteousness and his merits brings about the prosperity and the victory for the Jewish people. That's the kind of king, that's what David HaMelech was. And that's the kind of king that clearly leads the Jewish people on the proper path. Because yes, he has that job of bringing prosperity to the people, but he doesn't bring it because of his savvy or because of his military prowess. He brings it because of his chosin, because of his merits. he accomplishes hopefully the same goals, but the approach is different. It's because of who he is, because of his character, because of his righteousness. It's in his merits that now the Jewish people prosper, that the Jewish people are victorious in war. So these are the two possible kings that you could have. A king who is all about materialistic prosperity, and who is appointed as king because he is the best equipped to be able to bring that about. Or you have the king that who is going to bring about the prosperity of the Jewish people in his merit, through his righteousness. And based on the kind of person he is, that will make a very big difference about how his followers, how the people that he leads will be. So says the Arachai, that what's happening here is that the Torah is trying to tell you. The way that Arachaim sets up the psukim now is that Arachaim is saying that the Torah is trying to exclude the wrong kind of request. The Torah is going to be mentioning the wrong request, and then the Torah is going to be telling you what's the right way to go. So the way to read the psukim is the Torah is starting like this: Ki sabay al aretz asher shem alakecha leisilach v'rishtav yeshavtaba. You come to the land of Israel, you settle. The amart, and you will say, Asidu alai melech, I will place about myself a king, kochalagoyim asher siviv aysay, like all the nations that are around me. Okay, which means that the request is that what kind of king are you asking for? You're asking for a king like all the nations that are around me. You're asking for the king who will be your military leader. He will be the one that will be able to bring you military victory. He is the best equipped to bring you prosperity. And that's the kind of king you're asking for. That's the wrong request. When you come to the land and you will say, I want to place upon myself a king like all the nations that are around me. I want that king that's going to be able to bring me the prosperity that I need. That's the leadership for prosperity that I need. On that, the Torah says, no. You shall place over yourself a king that Hashem chooses, that Hashem would want. The way a king was chosen, the Arachai brings down from the Tosefta and the Sanhedrin, is, if you want to appoint a king, you need it. You need a Sanhedrin involved. You need a prophet involved. You need the kind of king that the Rebbe Nishom is going to choose, which is going to be the one that is righteous and in his merit brings you prosperity. So the way to read the Pesukim is, the Pasuk begins, Va'amarta, you're going to say, what's going to be your desire? What kind of king are you going to possibly want to ask for? You're going to ask for a king like all the nations of the world. You're going to ask for a king that's going to be your military leader. On that, the Torah says, you shall place a king that Hashem wants. You're asking for a king like all the nations. The response to that is, you shall surely appoint the king that Hashem chooses. You're asking for the king like all the nations of the world. You will appoint, mitzvah, you will appoint the king. You will appoint the king, not like what you just said, a king like all the nations, that his qualities of leader, that the qualities that you're choosing in him is his military leadership. But rather, when you do the mitzvah appointing a king, it will be the king that Hashem, your God, chooses. And by the fact that the Torah first mentions what you will say about your king, is why now, with the Pasuk says the same Tassim, you shall surely choose, that's why now the mitzvah is clearly being stated in a way to say, to the exclusion of what you said before, you're going to do the mitzvah appointing a king that Hashem would choose. If the Torah Chaim says, without this introduction, so to speak, let's say the Pasuk would have just said, same Tassim Elach HaMelech, without saying Va'amarta, without the introduction, you will say, give me a king like all the nations. Then the Torah will be saying, give this to appoint the king. What kind of king? Maybe the kind of king who's a military leader. It's not clear what kind of king. But by first mentioning the first half about your talking, you're asking about a king like all the nations. And now the Torah says, you shall appoint the king that Hashem asks. Now it becomes clear that what the Torah is trying to tell us, besides that we have the mitzvah of appointing a king, is to exclude the kind of king you're talking about before, whose qualities are just military prowess, prosperity, material prosperity. That's the kind of king you're talking about. That's not the king you will appoint. You will appoint in your mitzvah the king that Hashem wants, which is one like David HaMelech, that the prosperity he brings you is in his own merit. And therefore, it says Darachayim, that in the book in Sefer Shmuel, when the Jewish people made their request, and Shmuel was not happy with the request, and the Rebbe Nishom was not happy with the request, What was the problem there? The problem there is because the request was made, like the Torah here says. When the Jewish people asked for the king, they said, Simo lanu melech, appoint for us a king, l'shaltenu kochol agayim, to judge us like all the nations. The request was a king like all the nations have. That's the wrong request. A request for a king per se is nothing wrong. It's a mitzvah. It comes the point of time. It's a mitzvah to do. But the problem is, how do they request? They request for the king to be l'shaltenu kochol agayim, to judge us like all the nations. To judge us like all the nations. That means they're looking for a king, a kind of king that the nations of the world have. The one who's made king because he's the best military leader. That was the problem. That was the problem with their request. So therefore the Rachayim says that even if we have a mitzvah, an actual mitzvah to appoint a king, the Torah first said, V'amarta, you will say, not because it's something that's up to you to decide if you want a king, but rather the Torah is trying to mention the wrong way of asking for the king. You say, I want a king like all the nations. The Torah that says, appoint a king, the misappointing a king is one that Hashem chooses, which is not what you just said before. And the problem is later, in the times of Shmuel, that's how they made a request. Kachol HaGoyim, like all the nations. The way of the request was wrong.
Yeah.
A request for a king per se is not a problem. No, it's for the kind of king they were asking for.
Nevertheless, the selection was still done al pi Hashem. I mean, Shmuel.
It's supposed to be al pi Hashem.
Exactly. So he still did it correctly. What Hashem was upset about was that they asked incorrectly.
Correct. Okay. It was never a problem with Shmuel.
No.
The problem was always with the Jewish people.
With Shaul.
Right. The problem was the request.
Yeah, okay.
Now the thing is, again, it depends. Either the request itself could be wrong, if there's no mitzvah to have a king, per se, automatically. If it's only after you ask for the king, then the request is not right. But once the request is made, that's it. That means Jewish people are not holding by just having Hashem as their leader. They need a king. They need a flesh and blood king. But if you hold it, it's a regular mitzvah, then it was the way they made the request. Now, I'm just going to end off with the Aruch Chaim, with a question on the Aruch Chaim. Because if you look in the Pasuk again back in Sefer Shmuel, so their request was l'shaltenu kochol agoyim, to judge us like all the nations, right? So the real problem is the kochol agoyim. That's the real problem. The problem is the request was they want a king like the kings of other nations. But when the Pasuk then the next Pasuk reads, Vayera hadavar b'nei Shmuel, the matter was bad in the eyes of Shmuel, Kasha Amru, as they said, Tinalanu Melech HaShavtenu, give us a king to judge us. That's not the problem. The problem is, L'Shavtenu Kachal HaGayim. So, that's my question on the Aruch Chaim. Because the Pesukim really should be saying better, should be saying clearer, that why was Shmuel not happy? Because their request was, give us a king to judge us like all nations. If they just said, give us a king, that's not a problem. Okay, I guess you'd have to say, Koron Tzarechayim, it just kind of just, it didn't quote the whole thing. But again, it's missing the main point,
yeah.
Seemingly Koron Tzarechayim. But that's his approach.
Listen, they're not asking for a king to lead them, they were asking a king to judge them, meaning according to his values, not according to Hashem or Hashem's values.
You're saying a whole different explanation.
Right.
But again, I don't know if that would lie in the words l'shaftenu.
Yeah.
I don't know. I hear you're trying to say l'shaftenu means to judge us, not Hashem judge us.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, a king can judge. A king is a judge too, and he judges according to the laws of Hashem. It as itself, I don't know if it's a problem.
But for the Solomon troubles too, he didn't do what God told him.
A lot of kings didn't do what Hashem wanted from them. But in essence, that's what the king is supposed to do.
Right.
Okay. Now I want to share with you the Kli Yakar's explanation. And I think this Kli Yakar is very interesting, and I don't know if this is the right wording, but it'll come across in many ways not like our present day system of government, okay? Or at least it may expose some problems that I think we're aware of, and it's very interesting. So he again starts off with the question. You read the Pesukim, it seems like having a king is not a problem, and when they asked by in the times of Shmuel, they were chastised for doing so. So the Kli Yakar says like this. Shaharatzan aleiki haya shalatzedek yimleich melech aleim kli lahatol moroi al kulam. Kuyaka starts up saying, the purpose of a king is that the purpose of a king is order. Order is the purpose of a king. V'loi l'tzarech ha-mishpatim. The king is not needed for judgment. Why? Sherei ha-yubat v'dinim kavuim v'chalier. The rabbinical courts all over the place. El l'tzarech kibbutz v'tikon ha-medinos. V'ach bo'efen zeh sh'tiyeh emes malchus alem kibazeh rasa Hashem. The king doesn't have to establish law. Law is from the Torah, and law is adjudicated by the courts. But there has to be someone to enforce. You need order. And the point of a king is order. And a king is, the way to make order is because having this one authority, this one major authority, has the ability to really instill a certain fear and awe in the people that will keep order. That's what seems to be the best way to do it. The best way to keep order, the best way to have what he calls Mara Malchus, fear of the government, the best way to have order is to have that one supreme leader, really supreme leader, that is able to instill the proper awe in the people, the proper fear in the people, to keep the order. And that is what Hashem wanted for a king. That's what Hashem wants for a king. Now, so therefore the Kli Yakar says like this. So, Lekach Nemar, therefore the Torah starts and says, Ki Sava Yalaris, you'll come to the land that Hashem is giving you, you'll inherit it, and you'll live in it. Now, once you settle down and you start prospering, that's when trouble starts. Okay? People start getting caught up in themselves, and they start getting wealthy, and they start getting kind of selfish, and that's when their problems come up. Okay? The Amarta, you're going to say, I'll shall place over me a king like all the nations around me. They're going to be individuals, righteous individuals, who are, here we have a fledgling country, we have a new country. They're going to look around and they're going to say, we have a problem. We have a problem, we need order. So they're going to look around and they're going to see what is the best way, looking at other countries and other peoples, what is the best way to establish order? Law and order. What's the best way to establish proper order? The answer is, you need a king. Can't just have a judge. You need a king. You need a supreme authority. And my understanding of the Kli Yakar is that, and where are they going to see that from? From around them. Don't forget, this is a new country, it's a new nation, and they're coming to a point where, because of the prosperity of people, there's a certain corruption developing, and therefore they look around and say, okay, how do we now get that under control? So they look around at other countries and they see that a country, again, they look at other countries that are running properly, and they see when you have a supreme leader and people subjugate themselves to that supreme leader, that is where the order comes from. And therefore, V'amarta, you will say, I shall place upon me a king like all nations. There's nothing wrong about the request about all nations. All they're looking by the nations is that's where they are realizing that in order to have proper order within their system now of a more prosperous civilization, more prosperous society, the way to go is they look around and they see you need a king. But the main word here, says the Kli Yakar, is asima alai melech. I shall place over me a king. The understanding is that the king is alai, upon me, above me. He is my authority. The way you're going to now ask, want a king, is called asima alai melech. I will place a king over me. I want a king as an authority. And the answer is, shoyim tasim alecha melech. You shall surely appoint over you a king. You shall surely appoint a king to be an authority, because that's what you need. That's what you want. That's what you need in a king. That's what the king is supposed to be. The king is supposed to be an authority. And when you establish your king, and you appoint, and you establish your king, you establish him alecha, over you, as an authority. What happened in the days of Shmuel, says the Kli Yakar, was like this. So again, it's all about the wording. Their wording was, just look at the inside. Interesting. Okay. I just noticed something. When the Pasuk first records their request, the wording is Sima Lanu Melech. And then in the next Pasuk, when it says that the matter was not good in Eisem Shmuel, when they said Tana Lanu Melech. But the main point is like this. First it's Sima and then Tana. But the main point is, the word is Lanu. They didn't say Olenu over us, but Lanu. Sima Lanu. Appoint to us. Tana Lanu. Give us. We don't want the king over us. We want you to give the king to us. And look how he says this. Like he lay ratsu lakabo maris, shia moroi olenu. They didn't want to accept his authority. Ela yelanu maser biyadenu. It should be given over to us. Lakim machin lahadim machin. We appoint the king and we remove the king. And now we'll be forced to have to flatter us. So we'll have to be forced to try to make us happy. And that's why they said to judge us like all the nations. Here the Kliyakar focuses on the word l'shaftenu, to judge us. Where do you really need, right, when you need chanufa, when you need to get the politician, you know, when you want the politician in your hand, what's it for? It's for judgment, right? When he makes judgments, we make laws, when he takes decisions, right? You want to make sure that he's on your side. Ukaminik arzais elu. The Eretz Yisrael must be talking in his times. And like the practice of these lands, shemakablam ezarav alzman yadua, they accepted authority for a limited amount of time, so that they shouldn't have to be afraid of him. On the contrary, their fear is on the leader. So he has to make them happy so that they don't push him out. What does that sound like? It sounds like present day politics. Right? And it seems to be existing before. I didn't know how much it existed before. The way that Kliyakov is talking about, it existed before. It even seems to exist according to Kliyakov in the times of Shmuel. And that's what they wanted. Sina Lanu, place to us. Tana Lanu, give us. I think the word Tana Lanu, that part kind of gives a more clear connotation of what they wanted according to the Kliyakov. Give us. Give them to us. He's to be in our control. Right? He wants to keep his job. So therefore, he wants to keep his job. He's going to do what we want. Now, I don't know if the Jewish people are being as intentionally being as cynical as that, but the way they were asking, the wording they were using, was giving away what kind of the system that they want. And, you know, it almost sounds like, according to the Kliyakar, that, you know, the democratic system, you know, of voting in your leaders, right, doesn't sound like a very good idea, according to him. Not a very good idea. That's something that they seemingly want. That's what they wanted. And maybe they wanted it because, again, on the contrary, you know, you don't want someone to become a dictator. You want to have the checks and balances. But the problem, according to the Kliyakov was, the problem is, deep down, they don't want an authority over them. They want to be able to control him. Says the Kliyakov, that was the problem. That was the problem with the request. They say, we want Tana Lanu, give us a king, l'shaftenu, give us a king to judge us. If you want him to be given to you, how's he going to judge you properly? He's afraid of you. So he's not going to judge you properly. How can you do that? And that was Shmuel's problem. Shmuel's problem is that he understood in their words that what they really want is not, as our parasha says, some says him, Olech HaMelech, place the king over you. They want the king in their control. They want to be able to appoint the king. They want him under his control. If you want him under your control, and that was the problem in the eyes of Shmuel, he can't judge you then properly, because he's always going to be afraid for his job. He's always going to be biased. He's always going to be influenced by the fact he wants to keep his job. And so what? And what did Hashem say to Shmuel? He said, Hashem said to Shmuel, Shema b'kaylam, listen to their voice. Kiloy oyischa ma'asu. They don't despise you, which Kliyakov says, they're afraid of you. They know they can't get you to change your mind. They know they can't influence you. But rather, they want to get beyond me, right? They want to be able to get beyond, they want to get around, Hashem says, they want to get around what I want from them. They know they're not going to get that from you. And therefore, what do? They go in and make the request for a king. Give us, give the king to us. Put him within our power.
Who's making the request?
The elders of the Jewish people.
The most powerful people. So they're looking almost for the king to protect them from everybody else, like in America today.
Whichever way you want to look at it. The bottom line is they're looking for that ability to control the situation. Now, so Hashem says, so that's what Shmuel is bothered by, because that's not what a king is about. And Hashem says, that's the problem here. And then Hashem says to Shmuel, let them know what could happen with a king. And if you look here, the message that Hashem says to Shmuel, to tell the Jewish people is that the supreme authority of a king can really make life for you not so happy. You know, he has ultimate power. He can take anything he wants from you. He wants your son for the army, your son's going to the army. He wants your daughter for a maid, your daughter is his maid. So the Kli Yakar explains what the message was, is that you want a king that's going to be under your control. Why? Because you think that you go in and you appoint him, so what happens? Under your control. Guess what? He could blow up in your face. Because once he gets into power, he can use that power completely against you. He can completely control your lives. Very similar to what goes on even in places where they democratically elect a leader, and then a leader turns around, and what does he do?
Yeah.
He takes complete control and makes life miserable.
Like the president appoints the Supreme Court, and afterwards sometimes they go against the president.
Well,
same idea.
So the point is, so very interestingly, according to the Kli Yakar, the whole issue between Hashem and the Jewish people when they ask for a king is that in essence, when our parsha tells us you ask for a king, and you even ask a king, like all of the nations have a king, if you ask for the king, you want the king to be an authority to keep order, that's what a king's about. That's a proper request. But if you decide that you want a leader in a way that you could control the leader, because you want to have the power to appoint a leader, you want to have him, therefore you want him under your control, you always want him to be influenced by and to be under your control because he wants to keep his job, because otherwise you will remove him from his job. If that's what you want, that's not the kind of king that'll be the authority that you need. That's not, and he points out, again, I'll just repeat, the Kli Yakar says that when the request was, you know, simlanu, make us, or tana lanu melech l'shaftenu, give us a king to judge us, right? According to the Kli Yakar, when they ask l'shaftenu to judge us, which is not mentioned here in the Pesukim, it doesn't say l'shavtenu in our parsha, but there it does say l'shavtenu. The Kli Yakar is saying l'shavtenu is an important word, because the whole point is give us a king to judge us. They want to make sure that his judgments are always influenced by the fact that he's been given to us, by the fact that he's under our control. And that is exactly the problem when it says the matter was bad, because they said give us a king to judge us. If you want a king, he's not going to judge you properly, because he's always afraid. So, according to Kli Yakar, there's a mitzvah to ask for a king. There's nothing wrong to have a king, as long as your approach to the, as long as your approach to the king is the king should be an authority to keep order. But if the way you want a king is that you want to have control over the king, and that's how you want the whole system to work, that's the wrong way. So it almost sounds like a rejection of the democratic process. Now, we're not getting into all discussion about it. The bottom line is that the Torah says you should have a king. And the king is an ultimate authority. Right? That's not a question. A king, in according to Halacha, he's a total dictator. Just that he has a higher authority. Because he has that higher authority, and not only to have a higher authority, he has his own personal obligation, as the Torah itself says. Not too many wives and not too many horses. He walks around with a Sefer Torah with him constantly. Right. He has a lot of things that are there to remind him and keep him in line. But in essence, the way to go would be to have a benevolent monarch, right? To have a monarch who is really the supreme leader, a total, you know, authoritarian, but at the same time, you know, he's leading in the proper way. You have order then. You actually have that leader who has the merits. I believe I've seen that a king is really meant to be the representative of Hashem in this world. The closest thing for people to be able to recognize Hashem as king is for there to be a flesh and blood king that also has that ultimate power. But again, even his ultimate power all relates back to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It could very well be that if you want to have a discussion nowadays, you know, would we be better off with a benevolent dictator or not? Maybe we would be. The problem is, very hard to find benevolent dictators nowadays. And therefore, at the end of the day, if you do look around with all the shortcomings that that a democracy can have, at the end of the day, in the world that we live in, we may be better off with a democracy than being under a dictator, based on, you know, experience. Okay. Now, the so Pasuk Yizayim reads, so let's take a look. Look at Pasuk Yudches. V'yakashiv dal kisei mamlachtei, and it shall be when he sits on his throne. V'chasav lo yismishnei haTorah hazeis haSefer. He shall write for himself the words of the Torah on a scroll. V'lefnei haKohanim haLevim, from before the Kohanim. V'lo yisim lo v'karibay kol yemei chayav. He'll have, which means the Torah, with him, and he'll read it all the days of his life. L'man yilmad liyiras Hashem aleikav, so that he'll learn to fear Hashem as God. L'shmaras kol divrei haTorah hazeis, to guard all the words of this Torah. V'sachakim ha'eila la'seisim, and all these laws to do them. L'vilti rum levavai, so that his heart does not become haughty, me'echav, over his brothers. L'vilti rum levavai, so that his heart does not become haughty over his brothers. And in order that he does not stray from the commandments right or left. So the Torah wants to make sure the king, he does not want the king to become haughty and arrogant. Says the Ramban, if a king can't become haughty and arrogant, certainly the rest of us shouldn't be haughty and arrogant. So the Ramban says that Nirmaz Bekan, what's alluded to here when we say that the king shouldn't become haughty, Nirmaz Bekan b'Torah Isser Geis. The Torah is alluding to the prohibition of arrogance, of haughtiness. Ki ha-kasev yunas ha-melech migeyos from Masalei. The Torah is trying to prevent the king from becoming haughty. The choshchein ha-achem shen mri lakach. If there's anybody who's worthy of being haughty, it's the king. And if the king shouldn't become haughty, then clearly no one else should. So here is where the Torah is telling us, is alluding to the idea of that the Torah does not want a person to be haughty. We know that humility is the crown jewel, is the crown character trait of the Torah. And I want to share with you, I'm not going to have all the time, full time to do it, but I have here a book called Selected Writings from Rav Shimon Schwab Zatzal. Shimon Schwab was the Rav of Congregation of Kol Hadas Yeshurun in Washington Heights, the Breuer Shul, and he has an essay on humility. And there's some really, really interesting ideas here. I want to read to you from one of the sections here. Okay, he says, humility is the opposite of conceit. But humility does not mean to become the victim of an inferiority complex. That's number one. Okay, humility is not about an inferiority complex. To be humble does not mean to consider oneself smaller or unworthier than all other human beings. This would merely be an inverted form of pride. As long as I am inferior to all other beings, I'm still somebody special. You ever thought about that? I never thought of it that way.
Say it again.
He's saying if a person's attitude is, as long as I am inferior to all other beings, I'm still somebody special. It's inverted, he says, it's an inverted form of pride. Pride sets me out because I think I'm better than everyone. But you could have an inverted form where I set myself out from everyone because I'm worse than everyone. I'm inferior to everyone. And I don't think he means a fake inferiority. You know, there's a famous story about the person who was, you know, seemingly engrossed in his studies. People are there talking about him. oh, he's so righteous, he's so pious, he's so learned, he's so this. And after they finish all the praises, he picks up his head and he says, and I'm humble. That's not what he means. But he means to say that there's something wrong with the attitude of even feeling inferior to everyone else. There's something wrong to seeing yourself as special, or seeing yourself different than everyone. To be humble means to be nobody special, to be just like everybody. To be convinced that everybody given my chance could and would do the same as I do, may even have proven himself superior to me. Only by considering myself like everybody else, one amongst the many, can I strive to fulfill the precept, to be exceedingly humble as our sages have taught it to us. Humble doesn't mean I'm worse than everyone, I'm inferior to everyone. I am like everyone else. And even if I have lots of success under my belt, I'm still like everyone else. Because maybe if everyone else, as he says, if everybody was given my chance, if everyone was given the same situation that I'm in, they could have done just as good as me, maybe even better. So I'm not inferior, and I know what I've done, but really, I'm just like everybody else. But I can't have the attitude that I'm worse than everyone else either. I can't separate myself. That attitude itself is not humility. Humility does not mean I don't stand out. I don't stand out in any way. This is borne out by the Talmudic teaching that one must not stand amongst, I'm sorry, this is borne out by the Talmudic teaching that one must not stand amongst those that sit. One must not be sad amongst those who laugh, and vice versa. I don't know which Gemara this is. Unless it's just, he means Altifresh Menatzibra. We know there is a saying, don't separate yourself from everybody else. But the way he is citing this teaching is that, you know, if everybody's sitting, then what are you standing for? And if everybody's happy, why are you sad? Don't stand, there's no point of standing out. You don't stand out from others. For whatever reason it may be, you don't stand out. Any ostentation, the obvious effort to attract necessary attention is definitely a form of conceit. You know, there's a form of haughtiness when you actively want to get that attention, right? That's for sure. But again, even if I'm not looking for, I'm not trying to draw attention to myself, but just the mere separating myself from everyone, the mere not being just like everybody else, that is a contradiction to humility. Humility is, I am amongst everyone, I am like everyone else. He actually applies it in a very practical way in a shul setting. Now, just to give you some background here, in Kalas Yeshurin, in that shul that follows German custom, I can't say if every shul does this, but I do know that shul does it. Everybody wears a hat during davening. You wear a talis and a hat. That's what you do. That's the custom. A talis and a hat. It's not just the yarmulke on your head. It's not the talis on your head. It's a hat on your head. Okay? That's the custom in that shul. It's a German shul. Okay? So he says like this. To daven with a yarmulke where everybody wears a hat, to pull a talis over the head when nobody else is doing it, obviously attracting attention to oneself. Just like the reverse, in the case of a shul where the talis is worn above the yarmulke and where wearing a hat is the rare exception. The principle is always the same. I am part of the tzibur. It is my privilege to be a brother amongst brothers and nothing else, nothing more, and nobody special. That's unbelievable.
You have to have good brethren.
Yeah, true, that's for sure. But the point is that humility is about, I'm not different than anyone. Yeah, there's such a thing as rim lavavi. There's something where you really go to the point where you think you're everybody better than everybody else and want everybody to honor you. Okay, you can have a person and I'm not obviously looking for the honor, but you're standing out from everyone. You're standing out from everyone. You're standing out from everyone because everyone is doing one practice and you're doing different. Or even if the whole way you feel yourself different than everyone is because, who am I? Me, I'm garnished, I'm nothing. I'm nothing compared to everyone. No, you don't, that's not humility. Yomeli, it's not about being special in any way. It's not about standing. It's not about being different than everyone. It's about being part of the tzibur. It's about being like everyone else. And in being like everyone else, meaning I'm not better than anybody, I'm just like everybody else, that means to say that even when you know that you have successes over everybody, over others, again, the way you look at it, from the way the perspective of the Rav Schwab is saying it, you look at it as, again, I'm not different than him. If he would have had my, if he'd have my opportunities, if he'd have my chances, if he would be where I am, and nobody is ever in the exact place where anybody else is, if he'd be where I am, he'd be just as successful, if not more. So I think this is a very, very interesting and new approach in seeing humility.
What's the name of the book?
The name of the book is Selected Writings.
Come on.
You have to understand what you're reading, too.
You have to understand what you're reading. What do you mean?
No, because, you know, some people may take it the wrong way. What, even after you read this, you have to really understand what the rabbi means. Sometimes people can take different ideas from different...
I guess. I mean, clearly you're right. You know, he's not saying that everybody, if, you know, if everybody's doing something bad, you know, do something bad. That's for sure.
Yeah,
and if every, and then again, if you're in a place where everybody's doing something that really.